Welcome to Rough Drafts, How God Writes His Love in Our Stories, a podcast that explores the faith journeys of our friends and neighbors in Burns, Tennessee. Everyone has a story to tell, and in this podcast, we'll hear powerful and inspiring stories of how God works in the ordinary lives of people like you and me. Our stories are unfinished and perfectly imperfect. They are just rough drafts, a glimpse of what is to come because God is still at work, writing plot twists, introducing new characters, and bringing good even from the most challenging circumstances. Join us as we see what God is up to in our stories. Here's your host, Matthew Hyatt.
Oh, friends, you are in for a treat today. This is an episode that is an answer to prayer. It is something that I am incredibly excited about, and I feel slightly guilty for his sake about. Today, I get to introduce you to my new friend, our new associate minister at Burns, Chuck Ramsher. Chuck?
Hey.
You have been on the job approximately 7 hours now.
Yeah, I think it's time to go back to Virginia Beach.
I want you to know they were taking bets.
Oh, yeah.
And most people said you'd be gone by lunch. So,
well, BetMGM's going to make a lot of money.
Is this like the Super Bowl? Like, is there going to be a streaker?
As long as there's someone to help me pack.
Okay.
I don't care.
Well, you haven't even unpacked yet. You don't live here yet.
I don't. I actually just unpack stuff under my desk. So if anyone comes in my office, please don't kick under my desk.
Don't look under the desk. That's not a body there.
No.
I promise.
Nope, just a bunch of Legos in a box.
That's the Legos. Mm-hmm. You know, those Legos in your Facebook post were a significant topic of conversation.
Yeah.
People saw this post because they knew you'd come down here to visit, and they saw this post and like, is something going to happen?
Yeah.
At the moment, we didn't have it all linked in yet.
Right. So that may have been a huge faux pas.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying it was a conversation starter.
Yeah. I totally posted something, and I was like, maybe I shouldn't have. And then I got a couple of Facebook messages from people I love and respect,
yeah,
and they didn't say anything too negative. So
yeah.
Yeah, so I left it.
Well, it's pretty cool. It worked out great. So, I usually say tell us your God story, and I will. But before you do that, just tell me about you and your family, because this may be the first introduction that some people in our church, our community, have to you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I'm going to try not to cry at this moment.
Okay. So
I am currently here in Burns, and my family is back in Virginia Beach, waiting on houses to sell and all of that. But I'm married to the love of my life, Brianna Ramsher. We have four beautiful kids, Malachi, Isaiah, Naomi, and Titus, and they are all very different and very special. And you enjoy doing certain things with certain kids,
yeah,
and you know that that's their thing.
Yeah.
And so I tried to do as much of those things before I came down here. But, one of them's really into yo-yoing and will eventually start doing tournaments. My 15-year-old Malachi, he is 6'3". He wants to be 6'5". Loves basketball. But more than anything, I've seen a huge amount of growth in him spiritually. He's wanting to take on some preaching and some teaching of classes. And I'm like, man, go for it.
Yeah.
And he's like, Dad, help me write my lesson. I'm like, dude, I don't write lessons.
That's what ChatGPT's for. That's what AI's right. for. Come
yeah,
on, kid.
Yeah, yeah. Get with the times, man.
Yeah, seriously. Think we write our own lessons anymore.
Yeah, yeah. But I have singers. I have musicians. They're all wonderful.
Well, you said you had four beautiful kids. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be better if you said you had three beautiful kids and one ugly one and just let them fight it out every time. And you can decide who's who this week.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not naming names.
No. You're a smarter man than that. Well, Chuck, tell us a little bit about what you've come here to do.
I have come here to pick up the pieces that Matthew leaves behind. No, I've genuinely come here to love people and to love the community and to show people Jesus in whatever form or fashion that takes. I love writing curriculum. It's what my ministry and other full-time jobs have been.
Yeah.
And so I'm really looking forward to putting together something that's digestible for the congregation and congregations all around, you know, not putting God's word behind a paywall, but making things accessible, but also making it so that people are more hungry than ever. So even after you digest something, you turn it off and say, well, what about that?
Yeah.
That's my goal.
Stuff that makes you think.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we talked about earlier, you had this idea of kind of creating online content, videos, and things to read so that people, you know, one of the problems with church is it's at certain times. And if you're at work, we got a lot of people who can't come to a Wednesday night Bible study because they're still in Nashville then.
Right. And even creating curriculum or lessons for people who can't be there, but also for people who are maybe uncomfortable teaching. Like 45 minutes is a long time to sit in front of people and to perform.
Yeah.
And so if you can create something that can do a little bit of the heavy lifting and encourage you to do the same. You know, your first time out of the gate teaching class is going to be difficult.
Yeah.
That's just a fact. And it's nothing to feel ashamed about. And so I want to create something that will live online that churches, individuals can share with one another, and really create conversation. Cause I find that's something our classes sometimes miss.
Yes.
You know, I've been in classes where maybe the person teaching never asks a question, and you're like, "Why am I here?"
Yeah.
And then sometimes they'll ask a question and no one answers. But if we can ask engaging questions that people actually care about,
yes,
that's my goal.
Well, there's been a lot of Sunday school classes that are, frankly, minutiae in trivia that is trivial.
Yes.
You know, how many angels can dance on the head of a pin?
Yeah.
They should have been dancing,
right,
you know,
right.
trick. But, you know, it's intimidating if you didn't grow up at church and you come to church and, well, everybody's referring to that Noah and the Ark story. Mm-hmm. You know, what if we had a place where on your own pace, on your own time, you can catch up on some of those stories or some of those doctrines or, you know, not just for beginners, but what's hard about Sunday school is in the room, I can have somebody who is a baby Christian who knows nothing about the gospel and somebody who's been a follower of Jesus for 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
I can have somebody with a PhD and I can have somebody who can't spell ACT.
Right.
So, you know, creating some content that is accessible to different levels.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just excited about that.
Yeah, me too. It's been a dream of mine that is now a reality. And, you know, in your work, whether it's in secular work or in ministry, you have goals and then you have those white elephants.
Mm-hmm.
You have those dreams you want to chase. And this is one of those dreams for me that the eldership was super excited about.
Yeah.
I won't go into all the details of things that we put under the table, of things we never want to use again.
The top secret plans.
Yeah. but they were excited. I'm excited. And I hope that it's something that the congregation will get behind. And people who have been intimidated about teaching, that it'll make it easier for them. And it's something that people sitting in class will enjoy and maybe think, I can do that too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, anything we can to equip people.
Mm-hmm.
My definition of ministry is in Ephesians where it talks about equipping the saints for the work of ministry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's our job to help people be ministers.
Yeah.
So, well, that's going to be really fun. There's a lot of other stuff you're helping us with, kind of involvement, new member assimilation.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just all over.
Hopefully getting into chaplaincy in all areas in town. Yeah.
Yeah. Helping out with the hospitals and the jail and, you know, the morgue.
Yeah.
That gets a little late for that.
No,
I don't
know. No.
Well, what's your God story?
So I try to start out all of this and I was told to protect me, but I'll try to protect my family more than anything. I grew up in an atheistic household, and so God was not a part of my story. God was a part of my story in as much as my grandmother wanted to take me to church and my mother didn't want me to go. And so as a child, you want to please your parents. And so there was a lot of ridiculing of God, a lot of ridiculing of Christianity. And so it really wasn't until I was 16 years old that I started to think, you know, maybe there is something to this God thing. I went to Creekwood High School my sophomore, junior, and senior year. And I was in Miss Nichols' theater class and her speech class. And there was a guy in there named Wes Boker. Most of you all will know him. He's the exclamation point on my God story.
Okay.
I was in speech and we had to write a persuasive essay. And so somehow the topic, free will versus predestination, came up.
Okay.
And it was a question Wes had asked me, and I didn't really have God on my radar too much. You know, I'd started going to a Methodist church there, the Salem United Methodist out in Cunningham, and they were a huge part of my life, but I wasn't really committed to anything. And so I researched as many religions as I could as a sophomore.
Yeah.
And in high school can. And I came out believing.
Huh.
And so I wrote the essay, I gave the speech, and I had some questions for Wes, because I had observed him, and I was like, there's something different about him. And I said, why don't you speak the way other people speak? Why don't you curse?
Yeah.
And it's that old thing that a lot of us ministers say, when you act different, people will ask why.
Yeah.
And it's so true. It can seem like a cliche, but it's true. And he said, I just have better words to say.
Hmm.
And so from there, I followed Wes to Freed Hardeman.
Okay.
And my two options for college were either Freed Hardeman or Lipscomb.
Okay.
I had a scholarship to go to Lipscomb, or I could go to Freed Hardeman and pay for everything. And Wes was going to Freed Hardeman, so that was a no-brainer.
What would Wes do?
Yeah, right.
WWD.
Yeah. sounds like a lubricant.
Okay. WWD-40. Okay. Yeah.
We ended up rooming together in college. And the very first day of college at Freed Hardeman, I looked in the back of class. It was Jake Morris's psychology, his behavioral psych class, and I saw this really pretty woman in the back, and I said, there's no way she'd ever talk to me. And after class, she walks up to me, and she says, you look a lot like my boyfriend. Sounds like a pickup line. It was not. She thought I looked like her boyfriend, which I do not. Being tall and black, we all kind of look alike.
Agreed. Narcissist.
Yeah. No. From there, you know, a year later, she was my world, and ever since then, she has been. And I was baptized within the first week.
That really wasn't a pickup line.
It really wasn't. I mean, we hung out and skipped classes almost every single day.
That's good for the GPA.
Yeah, yeah. I passed on everything. It was fine. But, she was dating someone else.
Okay.
And I respected that.
Yeah.
And a year later, she had broken up with her boyfriend. I had broken up with my girlfriend. We were like, hey, let's give this a shot. And 4 years, well, 4 kids later, it's been a fantastic 16 years.
You guess you'll keep her.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I was baptized within the first week of meeting her.
Wow.
She studied with me and studied all the bad theology that I had at the time right out of me. Yep.
I'm glad she solved all of your thinking problems that way.
And I've never thought again.
Oh, no. You know she could hear this someday, right?
She doesn't listen to podcasts.
Okay, so you're safe. Is there anything? Yeah. Is there anything you don't like about her?
Man, she no, no.
Just kidding.
No, her patience annoys me. her stick-to-itiveness is the worst thing about her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, there's this problem when you marry really good human beings.
Yeah.
They make us look bad on a really regular basis.
Man, you know, this is me being extremely honest. As a minister and as a teacher, you kind of get put on a pedestal.
Yep.
And my wife is a servant. She's a peacemaker. She's a peacekeeper. She loves people. And a lot of times people come up to me and shake my hand and they say, you know, like this past week, and God love them, I love them, but brother, we're going to miss you so much. And they walk right past my wife. And it's nothing they're doing intentionally.
Yeah.
It's just where we place a lot of the emphasis on church work.
Yeah. Churches are notoriously bad for making ministers, especially preaching ministers, entirely too important.
Yeah.
Look, I do a lot of random stuff here, and you're starting a whole lot of random stuff here.
Yeah.
But if our job is to equip the saints for the work of the ministry, who's really doing the work of ministry?
Yeah.
The church.
Yeah.
So we're coaches, we're cheerleaders, we're navigators.
We're preppers.
Yeah, we're preppers.
Yeah.
Where's the canned food?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But
someone's got to hand out that canned food.
Mm-hmm.
Someone prepares it. Someone loves on it and loves the people who it's coming to.
I think ministers are like quarterbacks and coaches. I think we get entirely too much credit and entirely too much blame.
But
you know, we have been bad about neglecting what people do quietly,
right?
Which is exactly the stuff that Jesus said was most important.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some dangerous ground there.
Yeah. But all of that to say, I've learned a lot from my wife. And the way that she loves people in the church and in the community. And so one of the things I want to do here in Burns is really highlight those kinds of people.
Yeah.
You know, there will be times when I misspeak or when I emphasize the wrong things. And so I try to be as patient with other people as I want them to be with me. So as far as the God story thing, I was preaching on a Mother's Day.
It's gonna be good.
I was working with the church in Tulsa, and I said every stereotypical thing you could say about women from the pulpit.
Yeah.
And I thought I was being very generous and loving.
Yeah.
And my wife pulled me aside and she said, "You don't know how you just made every woman feel." And I'm like,
"No,
oh man," because there's so many things I miss.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, and you know, we're just all locked into our perspectives. You know, we see the world the way we were raised, what we've experienced, and that doesn't mean that our perspectives reflect reality.
Right.
But they feel real, and.
Yep. And sometimes you put your foot in your mouth, and people are very patient with you.
Did you ever hear the John Mark X story about when he wrote a book on women's role when he was like 21 years old? Because he was going to straighten out that.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave it to his mom to read.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked her what she thought about it. And her only comment was, "You sure use the word submit a lot." And he said, "Alarm bells went off, but it wasn't till later that I realized how loudly they should have been going off."
Yeah.
I thought, you know, it's amazing. One of the things that's so funny for me in preaching is the discrepancy between a sermon that I like and one that Leslie likes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I come in real excited. She's like, "Aw." You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes it's the sermons that I'm like, "I should have done that better." And
that
my wife's like,
stinker.
"That's, yeah." And sometimes my wife's like, "That's exactly what other people needed to hear."
It's the worst. We don't know what we're doing.
Yep. No. We just let the Holy Spirit lead, and sometimes I get out in front of him.
And sometimes he drags kicking and screaming.
Yep. But, you know, I'll say this. The church here at Burns, particular individuals I've known, some of them I've known since 1998, 1999, whenever my mom first started teaching in Dixon County. Out at Van Leer Elementary, and they've been a part of my life, whether it's peripherally or, you know, right there in the forefront, like now coming back coming back here. But my mom told me these are some of the people you can trust whenever you're in need.
Yeah.
And so even though we weren't Christians, my mom still saw those things in people who were Christians.
Well, you can tell trust. You can tell the sort of people that you'd want to put yourself near if something went wrong.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll know them by their fruits. My mom saw certain people here taking care of people when no one else would or no one else saw the need.
Yeah.
And when my mom was in need, when she didn't know what to do with certain situations, people here at Burns were here for her in that. And so I can see God working, looking back on things in ways that at the moment you're just like, oh, those are good people. But that's the light of God working through them in the darkest of places where you don't realize your darkness sometimes. And so, you know, I'll mention Josh Feltz. He's a huge part of my story. Over the last couple of years, you know, you move away and you lose touch, but you know the people who loved you, even when you were at your worst.
Yeah. His wife Amanda did one of these podcast episodes, if you've heard that one, and told a little of her story about how she got into fostering and social work, and it's a pretty cool story.
Man, what a wonderful family. I was absolutely awful to Josh Feltz in high school. Absolutely awful. And he smiled and took it. And it was his faith that was on display when I couldn't get a rise out of him.
I just want you to know, he was absolutely awful to me.
Yeah.
So we did this disaster relief trip. We were in New Bern, North Carolina, after one of the hurricanes. Josh and Kathy Gabriel, and I forget who else, they were working at a site cleaning up fallen trees. And he cut his pants with a chainsaw, so it left a nice gash in his jeans, not his skin, his jeans. Yeah. And that's when the idea hit them. So they packed his jeans with like ketchup and Gatorade, so it was all matted down. And they called me and told me there had been an accident. So I come in on the church bus on two wheels.
Yeah.
I mean, Penny's sitting behind me. She's like, I'm calling 911. I'm like, well, they said not to wait till we get there. He's under a tree. They have his leg wrapped up in a bandana, and he's got his hand, his head in his hand, grimacing. Now, I now know he was grimacing with laughter, but like, I'm thinking he's in shock. He got me so good.
That's almost unforgivable.
See, you heard it here, folks, ladies and gentlemen.
So, unforgivable. So anything I ever did to Josh, I'm just...
He deserved it.
He deserved it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You were just preparing the way.
Yeah.
I might have made a hand gesture to a bunch of people shortly thereafter that I had to have a talk with some people about later that day, but I also don't regret that.
Yeah.
Well, I love Josh.
I love him. He was... Other than the woman who's now my wife, Brianna, and Wes, he was the first person I hugged after I was baptized.
That's awesome.
I ran back to Paul Gray dorm and gave him a huge hug. And I apologized to him, and he said there's nothing to apologize for.
That's Josh.
Yeah.
That's Josh.
So after that, I have pictures of him and Sierra, who was Sierra Jenkins, Sierra Wink, laid out on the side of my Mustang Cobra, out in front of, well, now it's just a one way, but on that that downtown stretch in Dixon, like they were two people who I didn't know. I had no idea about the Churches of Christ. I had no idea about Burns or really anything religious here in town.
Yeah,
and I knew in seventh grade. Sierra was special. I voted her most likely to succeed. And there was always just a bubbliness and a joy for life.
Yes.
And a love for learning and a love for people that I saw in her. And so whenever I found out they were going to church with Wes, and this was years ago, I actually performed Wes's wedding here at Burns.
And that was where you and I actually met, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm awful with names.
I don't have memory of this.
No.
Sorry, Wes, but I don't remember your wedding. I know I was there, but...
It was a whirlwind.
Yeah.
But when I heard that they were all here together, I was like, that makes sense.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So how did you end up in ministry?
Oh, goodness. I was going to Freed Hardeman, and actually, let's back up a little. I was waiting tables at an Applebee's in Clarksville, right there on Wilma Rudolph. And this is the strangest thing, and people may turn this off after this. But I was waiting tables, and there was this lady sitting at a table, and she said, "Eric Ramsher." I said, "Who are you?"
Yeah.
And she said, "You don't know me." She said, "You're going to be a minister one day."
Wow.
And I was like, I don't even love Jesus. How is that going to happen?
Would you like some chips? I mean, like.
And it was just this strangest interaction. And then about a week later, some people from a Church of Christ out in Arizona were sitting at my table. And they said, "You have a wonderful voice. Have you ever thought about preaching?"
Huh.
And I was like, "No." So fast forward, I meet my wife, and we marry. We have Malachi, who's our oldest. He's 15. And I'm in school for business. And I'm thinking, why am I doing this? What's the most important thing I could do for my family? And about that time, my father-in-law got a call to go back and teach at Bear Valley Bible Institute, was Bible Institute of Denver. Now it's Bible Institute International. And he was like, the only thing that was going to take him away from his work in Arkansas was if he was going to go out to Bear Valley to teach.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, God, maybe this is the thing that's the most important thing I can do for my family.
Okay.
And so we all moved out to Denver together.
Okay.
And from there, it was just fast paced, four year degree in 2 years, and really that was it. Just thinking about what was going to be most important: me having a degree in business or me learning God's word.
Yeah.
And from there, I fell in love with teaching. Mm-hmm. Didn't necessarily fall in love with preaching.
Yeah.
But I love to teach.
Yeah.
And so that's. That's my preaching story. It's very simple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, still, what a moment to have somebody in Applebee's twice, kind of.
Yeah. Those are those kinds of stories that you're like, people are going to think I'm crazy because I would think someone was crazy. But that was my experience.
But we all have those experiences that, you know, a while back we taught this class on the unseen realm here. Mm-hmm. And what was so funny about it, every week there would be a line of people to talk to me and they'd say, "You can't tell anyone this story because people would think I'm crazy, but," and then they'd tell me their story.
Yeah.
And I'd say, "Well, I can't tell you who, but somebody in line just told me the exact same story.
Yeah.
Can I tell one of them, please?" Like, you know.
Yeah.
Because we all have these. One of the reasons for this podcast is I want to normalize the crazy God story.
Yeah.
There's Donald.
There are, and this is kind of fast forwarding quite a bit to about 2 years ago. Or maybe a year and a half ago. COVID time is different time.
Yeah, it is weird.
But whenever
we're not 18 anymore.
Yeah. That was 18 years ago. So whenever you all were doing the Unseen Realm class,
I was
snooping and watching along and listening to the stories. And this was right after just a really awful time in my life. Leaving Louisiana, and we can talk about that another time, or later, doesn't matter. But I was watching the way the congregation interacted with one another and the honesty, and it was encouraging to me. Where I was very focused on my secular work at the time. And I was like, okay, God, I need you to do something different in my life.
Yeah.
I need something different. I want something different. And so I was talking to Wes on the phone, and I still do almost every day. But we were just talking about the Holy Spirit and and needing the Holy Spirit to start moving in our lives and us actually recognizing it for the movement. And then you started teaching that class.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, I need a different focus in my life. And really, that's the reason I'm here today. If it weren't for you teaching that class, I'm sure the Spirit would have used something else.
Right.
But that was a huge change for me in recognizing the spiritual warfare that was taking place in every decision I made.
You know, it's funny, that study for me, that was a sweet, sweet class to teach. It was fun because so many church classes aren't actually classes. They're regurgitating knowledge for the faithful to make ourselves feel good.
Yeah.
But that was one that we didn't really have a shared understanding of. The opinions in the class were all over the place.
Yeah.
And I mean, for a whole lot of our people, it's just not anything they'd ever thought of.
Yeah.
And if I can say this without being too awful, a whole lot of what you hear talked about in terms of spiritual warfare is kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It was like my wife and I argued on the way to church, it must be the devil in our car. Like,
yeah.
Maybe it was that I was a butt, you
know?
Yeah. Not that the devil's not pleased with that.
Yeah.
So that study, the big thing that I took away from that was an illustration in like the second week. We are goldfish sitting in a bowl next to a window. And we do not realize how big the world is around us and what's going on outside of our little tank.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to call it my Elisha moment.
Yeah.
Where sometimes that layer does get pulled back. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't see chariots on fire. But I recognize something beyond myself when it isn't just my selfish desires. As James says, you know, it's your own lusts that have pulled you away.
Yeah. What causes fights and quarrels, your desires that are at war.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's easy to blame the spiritual powers. Sometimes it is me.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm allowing a foothold to be made.
Absolutely.
And so trying to recognize whichever one it is, it's a decision for me to draw near to God.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those times in my life where I was like, okay, I need to draw near to God.
Yeah.
He'll draw near to me. Satan will flee. And it's been a spiritual high, it's been a honeymoon.
Hmm.
It's been a spiritual honeymoon with God.
Hmm.
Ever since then, you know, you have your times of doubt. You have your issues that come up, whether it's between me and my wife who never fight. And I always agree with every decision the elders make.
Yeah, they're perfect.
I love everything the deacons ever do.
And your kids never misbehave.
My kids are perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've got some oceanfront property for you, you know, if you believe that.
Yeah. But it helps you deal with those decisions,
mm-hmm.
Knowing how close God is. And I really can cast all of my cares on him, all of my anxieties on him. My wife and I have been joking over the past couple of weeks as we're trying to sell the house and, you know, everything's up in the air. She's like, have you decided to cast all of your anxieties on him because he cares for you?
Well, if you want to know the truth, like, you know, our eldership was unanimous and you coming here, I was 100% on, everybody's been 100% on board. Like, in all prayers have seemed to be answered in this way. But there have still been nights where I have woken up. This guy's moving across the country. What if we're not ready? What if we screw this up? Like, and I've had secondhand anxiety for you.
Yeah.
And I'm not the one who just drove 12 hours.
Oh, goodness.
You know?
Yeah.
So I appreciate your willingness to take this step of faith and trust a weird little church in Burns, Tennessee.
This weird little church in Burns, Tennessee is made up of some people I don't know, a lot of people I don't know, but a lot of people who have chosen to stay. And I've seen the fruits of it in my own life.
The Island of Misfit Toys.
Yes, yes. We tend to find those everywhere we go.
Yeah.
That's what we call our little group that Sabbath together in Virginia Beach. Our little islands tend to find us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. Well, man, I'm not cutting you off. We've got all the time in the world, but is there another story you want to share?
Probably the one that I just kind of mentioned. So as far as the spiritual disciplines go, which is a direct answer to the spiritual warfare, my family loves Sabbath.
Yeah.
And it, for everyone who's listening, it isn't us law keeping.
Yeah, don't get the wrong idea. Yeah. We're not turning into Seventh-day Adventists.
No, no. Just bring all the red heifers and we'll sacrifice them beforehand.
So is that Brittany Cowell? Never mind. Church.
Nope, not touching that one.
Okay.
yep. Saturday night, beginning at 6 o'clock or around 6 o'clock, we've already decided what we're eating.
Yeah.
And we put our phones in what we call our Shabbat box.
Yeah.
We turn them off for a period of 24 hours and it's just us.
Yeah.
It's sharing our trials from the week, but also, leaving those things behind and not letting them define us for the next 24 hours.
And talk about a preparation for worship.
Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. Where, you know, there are those things that come up because grief and pain, you can't really shut the door on them,
right?
But you can allow joy to come in and to shed light.
Well, even for Jesus, you know, he said, "Was Sabbath made for the man, or man for the Sabbath?" Yeah. So, you know, while keeping this order of life, this rule of life, is beneficial, you still find a way to do what has to get done,
right?
But recognize, I like the way when you first explained it to me, you said, someone has to make the choice to dial my home phone number before they call me on Saturday night or Sunday after. They have to think, is this worth calling his family instead of just texting me?
Right.
That's a pretty cool idea.
Right. And 6 p.m. Sunday is coming.
Yeah.
Like, I will take every single concern you have if you will give me that period of time to rest, worship, delight, and stop. Stopping is the big thing. It's so hard to do because you have those things that you said I want to accomplish, and they are important. I don't want to trivialize whether it's the work of the church or whatever it is. Things that I've said I'm going to do for my kids that I keep putting off.
Yeah.
But eventually we have to stop and spend time with God.
So I hate to use the word rule because that brings the wrong idea, but what's your rule for the work you do during that time? You know, are you allowed to assemble IKEA furniture for your kids? I mean, like what are your boundaries? Boundaries, that's a good one.
Yeah. The question you have to ask is, does this bring rest?
Okay.
And so a lot of people look at rest as doing nothing.
Yeah.
But when you look at Genesis chapter 2, in one verse, it says God rested Adam in the garden.
Yeah.
And then the other one says he put Adam in the garden. The one that says he rested him is the word Shabbat. And so he Sabbathed him there to work.
Yeah.
And so there's a different kind of work Adam and Eve were going to do in the garden than when they left or were exiled, and by the sweat of their brow they were going to work. And so it's focusing on that first work, the one where you're serving God, you're serving the land. I try not to kill spiders during Sabbath.
How about wasps?
Wasps got to go.
Okay. I wanted to make sure that we all understood that is an ox in a ditch sort of thing. Yeah, they got to die.
They're technically a thistle.
They are. That's correct.
Yeah.
It's in the Bible.
Yep. So that's the distinction you have to make between the kinds of work you're going to do.
So you don't mow the lawn?
I don't mow the lawn, no. Actually, I totally would mow the lawn. I love it.
Do you? Okay.
I love mowing the lawn.
You know, it's funny to me how, and this is one of the conversations, even when you have Old Testament studies about Sabbath, you know, the work is truly not defined by Scripture. That's one of the reasons why Jesus' conversation with the Pharisees was so difficult.
Yeah.
They had a definition that they had come up with and imparted on everyone else. Mm-hmm. You know, they decided the disciples rubbing grain between their fingers while they walked was work.
Yeah.
When nobody in their right mind would actually think that unless they developed a system they wanted to protect.
Right. Yeah. But pulling an oxen out of a ditch isn't.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, if you asked me to golf with you,
yeah,
that would be work. Mm-hmm. I find no joy in that.
Yeah.
If you asked me to run around the lake, that would not be work.
Yeah.
And it's funny how we don't understand that.
Yeah. 24 hours of pickleball is not work.
By 24 hours, it would be work. I'm pretty smoked after a couple of hours, yeah. You know.
But, you know, it's even when we're looking at the work we do, Sunday to Saturday.
Yeah.
A lot of it shouldn't be work.
Yeah.
It's kind of what we make of it, and are we doing it to the Lord?
Hmm.
And so that's the distinction I make.
Yeah.
But one of our rules, I'm okay with the word rule, is no heavy conversation.
Huh.
That gets violated a lot.
Yeah.
But the idea is lay your burdens down.
Okay.
Enjoy the bread.
Problems are to be solved another day.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's a time for delight.
So do you ever just say something really mean to the kids at 5:59 and then they can't respond for 24
yep.
hours?
Yep. All right, kids, it's time to light the candles.
Yeah.
So my two youngest sons, they've learned the fire in the bread blessing in Hebrew.
Yeah.
And so one will say it in Hebrew, the other will say it in English.
That's cool.
And then we go around the table and the kids are really excited to be the one who starts.
Yeah.
And everyone has a candle.
Yeah.
And so you say something about your sibling or your parent or the grandparents, or we usually have people from the congregation over, some way they've affected your life in the last week and
cool.
and what you hope for them in the next week.
Yeah.
And then you say Shabbat Shalom.
Yeah.
And then it's their turn.
That's cool.
And so that's really the highlight. And then it's, you know, dinner, games. My kids have made up their own games.
Yeah.
So that's been a huge joy. Sometimes it gets out of hand because they're kids.
Yeah.
But
I've always struggled when our kids make up games because the rules don't ever make sense to the grown-ups and
yeah.
it breaks us a little bit.
Yeah. Or, you know, the movement of a hand by a millimeter breaks a rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, it's them working through relationships, and I have to be patient with that. And it really allows a time for our kids to know that our relationship with them is being worked on in those moments.
Intentionality.
Yeah, yeah. And so some people don't understand it.
Yeah.
They want all of your time, or at least for you to be available all the time. And you have to draw a line to say, this is our time with God, and we want the same thing for you. You are more than welcome to come and be a part of our yeah. time with God.
Yeah.
But this is important for our family.
But this is what it will look like.
Yeah.
You know, Christians for a long time have practiced rules of life,
mm-hmm.
rules of faith. What does it look like? And for modern Christianity, it has kind of devolved into the rule is, I'll go to church on Sunday unless the weather's good or bad or...
Yeah.
If it... You know, I don't mean to make fun of that because there's some legit reasons.
No, yeah, yeah. Don't go out in a tornado.
Right.
Yeah.
But yes, when this podcast goes live, there might be one.
Yeah.
It's Tennessee. But so I have a friend who one of his rules for life is a financial rule. Mm-hmm. And he says when he budgets each year and at the end of the year, his goal is to give or support or do good
mm-hmm.
with more than he spends on himself for pleasure. Mm-hmm. So like he kind of defines some categories. He's like, I want to support missions and benevolence and things like that. I want to add up what I do in that category, and I want to add up what I spend on movies or Netflix or eating out. Yeah. And I want to know that I did more of that than this.
Yeah.
You know, what an intentional way to,
right.
Most of us just say, man, I need to spend less on that. All right. I skip tomorrow's meal at the restaurant.
Right.
But it wasn't just, I want to save money. It was, I want to have a rule for the way I live.
Yeah.
And he goes through several others.
Yeah. Isaiah chapter 58. If you have your Bibles, please turn there.
It's just turned into church.
Yeah. But that has given me a very strong rule for life.
Yeah.
Where Isaiah, well, it's the Lord God talking. He's talking about the way people Sabbath, mm-hmm. and the way people have turned fasting into something it was never meant to be.
Yeah.
And he's telling them, don't hide yourself from your own flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever decisions we make, whether it's in Sabbath or when we see someone on the corner who needs help,
yeah.
do I get over in the other lane so I'm as far away from that person as possible?
Yes. No, that's the wrong answer. No.
When someone does call and it is Sabbath,
yeah.
what's my response going to be with my time?
Yeah.
You know, yes, it's my time with God. It's my time with my family. But I also have to weigh, okay, God, is this something that can be done right now, or is this something that yeah. that can wait because I want to do it? And so, am I hiding myself from my own flesh?
Yeah.
Whether it's in fasting or in Sabbath,
those are just such good questions. Because most people, you know, at the end of the day or the month or whatever, say, man, I just don't know where the time went. And the question, I mean, you spent it. You just didn't think about it while you did it.
Right.
And, you know, what I would kind of encourage people, maybe you're not ready to take that full commitment yet.
Yeah.
Find a part of it to start. And then maybe make that a little bit bigger commitment next month, yeah. next year. I'm not encouraging them not to go all the way. But sometimes I've seen for people, the big idea is so intimidating they do nothing.
Yeah.
Where if I could get some of our families to do one meal per week at home with no phone,
yeah.
that would be such an order of magnitude better.
Yeah.
What if we said no to one sports season?
Mm. Yeah. But you got to get those contracts.
Because your kid's going pro, man.
Yeah.
No, I mean, not that last part, you know.
Your kid's going to have a productive life no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it just takes over us so quickly. And I'm not beating up on sports.
It's, no.
You know, we do it with our jobs, our career. Shucks, some of us do it with our yards.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we want to have this perfect thing to show off.
Yep. Yep. I love Georgia.
Yeah, do you?
I do. It's the grass that feels best to my feet. But there's a better planting that I can do inside my house, around the table, playing games I may not want to play.
Yeah.
Because my kids know that there's a foundation for when they leave the house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of talked about it earlier today. You know, some people are very afraid of where our kids are going.
Yeah.
Here's a perfect way to instill something in them that's family-oriented, it's God-oriented, and something that they can share with their families that they genuinely love.
And you're creating space. I read this study years ago, and I'm sure you've seen it, about the preaching of the Good Samaritan parable. And the story was basically they took theology students, Emory, Candler, I can't remember where, they took them, and in the way that they do scientific studies, right, they get divided into control groups. And all. So half the students were to preach on the parable of the Good Samaritan. Half of them were supposed to preach on, I don't know, something. What did it matter? So they had the students all, they were all told they were supposed to report to Building A at 6 p.m. to preach their sermon on that text.
Mm-hmm.
But when they got there, half of the students, so divided in half the other direction, right, got told that they needed to be at another building across campus and that they were already 10 minutes late.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the students, all the students got sent to the other building, but only half were told that they were late. Half were told they had plenty of time. And they passed an actor who was on the ground who had just fallen down the steps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they have him bloodied and on the ground moaning, and they had hidden cameras and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing that made the biggest difference on who stopped, us church people would like it to be everyone who is about to preach the parable of the Good Samaritan stopped to be the Good Samaritan. That's what we want the answer to be, but that was not the answer. The answer was the ones who thought they had time stopped, and the ones who thought they didn't have time didn't stop. And think about your life and mine.
Yeah.
When do we help? We help when we think we have time, mm-hmm. and we don't when we don't.
Yeah.
So one of the takeaways from that little study to me was, if I want to follow the Good Samaritan and be the neighbor, maybe the most important thing I can do is make sure I have time.
Yeah.
There's this great book called Margin, and we run our lives to 100% and we think that's good, when really we probably ought to run our lives to 80%.
Yeah.
So that when we run to 85%, we've still got a little room to breathe.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Before coming back into ministry, full-time ministry, I was writing curriculum for car companies.
Fun.
And so a lot of my work was with EVs.
Hmm.
And so up until very recently, the best practice is to fill your battery to 80%.
Huh.
Never fill it to 100%, because that's when you actually start to drain the battery.
You degrade the...
Yeah. And the law of diminishing returns actually is a thing.
Yeah.
And so I think it's the same way with the human heart and with the mind and with the body. Not to say that we shouldn't give it all we have, but sometimes when we look at our own 360 degrees of influence, if we're really at 360 degrees, there's something that ends up dying, or something we end up leaving on the plate, because we're trying to overextend ourselves, whether it's because of something within us or some kind of expectation from other people.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a good rule to, you know, do what you can, do it to the best of your ability.
Yeah.
But if your life is at 100% fullness, there's no room.
Another version of that concept I heard was strategic neglect. You're going to neglect something, be strategic about what you neglect.
Yeah.
I would rather my grass look bad than my kids be bad.
Yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
That's...
We went through a season of learning how to say no, and people don't understand.
It's tough.
Yeah. So The Power of a Positive No is a fantastic book for every member of the church to read. You know, you can say no, but...
Yeah.
Or no, and, without just saying no.
Without just slapping somebody.
Yeah, right.
Boundaries. Boundaries are the distance at which I can love both myself and you at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Boundaries are our friends.
Yeah.
Okay, the frustrating... I'm going to put the preacher hat back on. Frustrating thing about this conversation is the crossed wires phenomenon in church.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like sometimes when I share messages like this... Okay, this is going to be judgy, but I don't know how else to do it. Sometimes the lazy people are like, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the people who work hard are like, but I need to make sure I'm doing enough. And you're like, no, you're getting the wrong... Flip it. You know?
Right. Yeah. Or the people, you know, there's the Pareto principle, where you have 20% versus the 80%.
Yep.
And, you know, the 80% are the ones who usually get their sense of belonging from doing 100%.
Yeah.
And so you have to be very careful not to say to those people that what they're doing isn't important. And I think that's sometimes what they hear. Like, my wife, she's generally a 100%, let's go, let's do everything.
Yeah.
And then she needs a season. And so who's going to pick up that whatever gets dropped in order to let other people refill? And so I think that's a part of our job.
I'm going to do something real dangerous here, and I'm going to talk directly to one listener. I'm not going to say her name, but she listened to an episode a couple weeks ago where someone told a powerful story, and she stopped me at church and said, I just felt so bad. I'm not doing all these amazing things that this person is. And I said, yes, you are. You're doing amazing things, and you are overloaded today. Don't feel bad about saying no. If God wanted you to do it, he would have created the capacity for it.
Yeah.
So either if you really feel called to do this thing, figure out what goes, or come to peace with the fact that the world has a savior and it's not you.
Yes.
Granted, I should have been talking to myself on a few things there. But
I love Ephesians 4.
Yeah.
Jesus is all things to the church, and he gave some as apostles, some as prophets, some as evangelists, some as teacher pastors.
Hey, psst.
Yeah.
APE, that's how you to memorize that passage. Apostles, prophets, evangelists, teachers. Yes,
Tape as well.
Oh, tape is way better.
Yeah.
Man, I shouldn't have gone to Freed.
Yeah.
Bear Valley gave you better acronyms.
But, you know, I am not all things to the church. And as a minister, sometimes you feel like either you're expected to be or you genuinely want to be.
Yeah.
But being able to say, Jesus fills all in all, I'm going to play my role. I'm going to use my gifts the way I can, and I'm going to say no to those things that aren't my gift. Not everyone's a teacher.
Yeah.
And that's something I've tried to explain to elders the world around.
Yes.
You know, everyone wants, especially elementary teachers, and so we try to force people into these roles, and they end up leaving the church.
Yeah.
Because that's not their thing.
They're embarrassed or they're ashamed that it didn't work. Mm-hmm. We've really put a priority on public speaking things, like everybody ought to lead prayers publicly in the church.
Well,
that's a nice idea, but, you know, I'm really grateful for the people who keep the lights on.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Yep. I need that person opening the door and giving me a hug. I don't always need someone to teach me a lesson.
Teaching's important, but it's not the only thing. And, man, we've made that mistake too. Well, this has been fun.
Yeah.
Now, what I can't wait is to get your wife on here and get her version of the story.
She will tell you everything that I've said exactly the way I said it, because we agree on every way to tell a story.
All right. And if you want to bet on that, boys and girls, you can log on to, you know, see what the HUDs are. That
she's the light and love of my life. She shows me Jesus in ways that I can't explain.
Buddy, this is not Valentine's Day. You're making the rest of us look bad.
Valentine's Day is every day when you're married to Brianna.
Wow, it's getting deep.
I'm really good at this.
Wow. You've only been gone a day.
I sent her flowers today.
You are such a show-off. You're making us all look bad. Stop it. People start expecting that stuff.
Mm-hmm. This has been awesome.
This has been fun. Well, guys, I know you're looking forward to getting to meet Chuck. I don't know what to tell you, but come and meet Chuck. I mean, he'll be around. He'll be around community, around the church. You know where to find him, and I hope that you'll spend some time with him, and you'll be blessed, and maybe enjoy a Shabbat dinner with him.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'd love to.
Well, thanks for listening today, friends. You obviously know where to find the podcast, but maybe there's somebody in your life who doesn't listen to these too terribly often. Maybe you can share it with them, and maybe it'll be one of those weird things that God does to bless somebody or trigger somebody or point somebody in a good direction. But until the next time we get together, I can't wait to find out what weird, fun, cool stuff God does in your story. See you then.
Thanks for listening to Rough Drafts. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. While you're at it, help us spread the word by leaving a rating and review. Until next time, let's keep looking for how God writes his love into our stories.